Welcome to Life Lab, hosted by David Ponder and Zach Schaefer, where we inspire listeners to live the good life through organic conversations about evergreen topics.
Life Lab captures our belief in personal evolution and a growth mindset. So,
experiment with life.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So when I got here, we started talking about some current events because there are a crazy amount of, what would you call it? Abnormal change. Change seems to be rampant right now.
I view it as going from fairly boring equilibrium in the world to volatility as the norm.
Yeah, what's the saying? Sometimes things take decades.
And sometimes they change in a week, what seems like decades.
Yeah. So anyway, we butchered that. That's
yeah, it's terrible.
But anyway, it doesn't matter.
Sometimes for decades, things don't change. And sometimes in a week, they change as much as a decade. Who knows?
We sound like George W.
Strategery.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice.
You get a good look at a T-bone sticking my head up.
You can't get fooled again.
That's a butcher's ass.
So anyway, that's hilarious. So anyway, we're talking about these current events, and then we're talking about the power players involved in these current events and which side they're on, right? And it just got me to thinking about how if you, as a person, you get labels, right? And you get labels on which side you're on. And like, what does that boil down to? You know, so if we're talking about people who identify as Republicans or Democrats, or they identify as a Catholic or an atheist, or they identify as and what are those things, right? Because in the current events, it's almost like the thing we default to when coloring our view of these power players. It's like, oh well, he's clearly a libertarian, so he thinks X, Y, and Z, and we're talking about tribes.
Yeah.
And today we're going to talk about tribalism.
Yes. And the least the same term that came out of academia, they used to be called referent groups, but tribalism is a better marketing term for it.
Yeah.
And it means the same thing. But yeah, when you're referring to a group from which you get your identity, beliefs, and emotions, that's your tribe.
I like that. A group from which you get your
identity, beliefs, and emotions. Yeah, so I just made that up. I don't know if that's like an official definition, but I think that's kind of how it works.
It's good. That's good. It's good enough. And I'll say, if that's the definition of a tribe, I saw, and I thought this was good, that tribalism is consciousness and loyalty to that group and exaltation of that group above other groups.
Yeah, and I think one of my notes was, because I think we'll probably go through a variety of either or of different tribes starting to war, if you will, or starting to disagree with each other to ramp up that volatility we discussed. One of them is globalist versus nationalist. And that always occurs during when wars are going on, or a potential of which we have both happening now. But nationalists, that's just the biggest tribe at the biggest level for social human collectives. So that's just saying, hey, our tribe, our country, we believe, have certain identities and get certain emotions from certain things. We think these values are the way that we want to do it. And we probably think the way that other places in the world should do it, but at least us, we're going to do it this way. And if we don't try to either spread that to others or at least condemn what other people are doing, they view that as a scarcity model, that their value system will then spread and overtake ours. Their tribe will beat us. They'll get more of the pie.
That's really interesting. I like that thought. Who's that? Whose idea is that?
A guy named Zach Schaefer.
I think he's on to something. Yeah, no, that makes total sense. So basically you're making the argument that tribes – have values, shared values.
Yeah.
And they want to spread their shared values because they want to grow their tribe, because strength in numbers, if nothing else, right? And they look at their values almost like a commodity, right? That since they value those values, that's the commodity of their group, and they want to see that proliferate. They want to see it grow.
Ooh, I like that. Right? I like that. Or I think an even more powerful way, So that's putting system two thinking behind it. Like, yeah, oh, it's a commodity. Like, let's think about how we produce the commodity and expand the commodity, mm-hmm. right? And that's smart, but mm-hmm. that takes deliberative thought. Mm-hmm. I think a more insidious and powerful form is not even thinking about the values. It's just internalized, it's taken for granted, and just assumed, well, no, they're not values. This is the way it is.
Yeah.
And it should be this way everywhere.
Right.
That to me is more powerful, more primal too.
It is. That's the system one thing.
Yes.
And that is what that is what seems to be on display a lot in modern politics, especially in recent years, although it seems to be dying down. Or at least changing, speaking about change, not dying down. When I say dying down, I mean this particular movement, and I'm talking about the Trump movement, Trumpism, it seems to be losing favor. And we can argue whether that's true or not. At least it seems.
Well, it is now, but it'll obviously pick up steam now that he announced.
Well, I was going to say, at least I think it seems to be losing favor within the Republican Party. So that tribe.
Well, it is as of now.
So it's almost they're splitting tribes.
Yeah, they are. Well, again, there's always tribe. So it's hierarchical. So there's tribes, sub-tribes, et cetera.
Right.
Let's be clear.
But what I wanted to say was.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Especially within that group, they surely. There are very intelligent, reasoned people in that group. But the public persona of the MAGA tribe was very system one thinking. Was feeling based.
All populist politicians appeal to system one. Obama appealed to system two thinking. Deliberative Harvard Law scholar, University of Chicago. They use emotions.
Yeah,
his whole appeal was his thing.
Remember?
Well, yeah, that's their talk track.
Hope and change, or something.
Yeah, hope and change, and
system one too. Yeah.
Yes, my point is though, in general, Obama was like, "Let's think this out. Let's be rational."
The way he talked,
his whole demeanor. He was a Harvard Law professor.
Yeah, yeah.
Trump is the opposite of that, and plays to that. Populism is all about all emotion driven. Right. Now, I believe all politics is primalism. That's where people can tap into those emotions, the different tribes. And I used to make fun of people going to political rallies. Like, it just was so silly. It's like, I already know I'm going to vote for this guy. Why do I need to get excited about it? No, that's where you spread the message. The emotions build the contagion, the passion, and just.
I don't want to just be the guy who votes for him. I want him to win.
And
I need to grow my tribe. I need to spread this
commodity. And now to me, I see that like, shit, why don't businesses do more of that? Boom, that rah, 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 that tapping into that tribe and building the solidarity and cohesiveness. I do think this needs to be said. We're recording this on November 19th, 2022. Usually we talk about all evergreen topics, you know, everlasting principles that can be applied across all eons and ages. But today, tribalism does do that, but we're also going to bring in some
current events.
But I do think it's important because with what you were saying with the tribe, the Trump tribe, yes, it has lost steam, but that's because look where we're at. He just announced the Republican Party's figuring out what's going on. They know they're about to enter primaries, so people are figuring out, well, who do we align behind? What do we do? He's pretty good. I'm not saying he'll even win the primary, but yeah, of course, compared to where he was as president to now, yes, easy. The rate of change has gone down, but he's also quite good at stirring playing people.
Here's what I'll say. I don't think that the Republican Party ever were stoked to back him, even in the beginning.
And the establishment. No way. The Bushes, Cheneys hated him.
And he basically commandeered that in the past, but it was a sneak attack. Like, they didn't realize how formidable he was.
He didn't realize it. He said himself, wasn't serious going into that last primary until he won. He's like, oh shit, I can actually win this.
Right. And this time, they know. They know how formidable he is, and so I feel like they will mount a much stronger defense.
It'll be interesting.
What's the dude, DeSantis out of Florida?
Ron DeSantis.
They'll put him – like they will have really good viable alternatives that they throw their weight behind.
He's a nationalist. Trump's a nationalist.
Sure,
the nationalist, and he hates the globalist, which New York Times is a good group there, or Ray Dalio, people that – want countries to be bilateral with major global decisions, have trade going on everywhere, have true cooperation. Whenever you hear that term globalist, it's always thrown around with this negative connotation behind it.
It is, yeah. It is.
But those are two different camps.
I would also call him protectionist.
Yeah, all nationalists are protectionists.
Yeah, and that they look at others who are in other tribes. Like those globalists, those people on the other side of the ocean, that's some other tribe. Mm-hmm. And they're a threat.
Right.
And we need to protect our own interests.
Well, and it's just hard to separate things like that with a global economy now at this point.
Well, and I think that we're hitting on something that's interesting that I read a little article on, and it was people arguing about this. And they were arguing about, does a group – like think about groups that are – like there are globalist groups, right? And so those groups' values, you could argue, would include cooperation with others who you are not like.
Yep.
Who – may have different values, right? So is that actually goes against what I traditionally think of as tribal, right? Like if I think about tribal, all this imagery comes to me. Like you talked about at the beginning, the academic term is a reference group versus what commonly gets used as the tribe. And to me, it's like it's a no-brainer to use the term tribe because – we have reference in our head. We know what a tribe is.
Yeah, everyone
We've got all this imagery. We understand, oh, yeah, that's what humans came from. Like we've evolved from living in tribes as hunter-gatherers, and mm-hmm. we then started to build civilization.
We're still in tribes.
You know, we know what excommunication was like mm-hmm. to be kicked out of a tribe or community and how that was the worst punishment. So it's very strong. Losing your tribe in those days meant death. Think about that. You know, leaving your tribe, getting kicked out of your tribe.
This is one of my – this might be my most important point I make, I think, for today.
And so what I'm – but what I'm saying is that's like what I associate with. So let's put a pin in that. Let's put a pin in that. That's going to be your most important thing, and we'll get back to it. But what about these groups like the globalist type group who it seems, at least on the surface, that their values are the opposite of that. Their values are inclusiveness, diversity, you know, like opening the group, not being protectionist of the group, but being open.
Well, to me, it's yes. The way the lens you're looking at it through and describing it makes sense. But to me, it's just the vantage point. They view it, the tribe, the referent group as.
Hi, I'm Mark Miller, owner of Miller Furniture, your home for quality American-made furniture since 1927. I'd like to expand on Life Lab's motto, which is experiment with life, and how it relates to us as a furniture company. We're currently in our 95th year in our American furniture retail experiment. Each year, we continue to tweak and optimize what we can do for you, our valued customer. And in any experiment, you must have control groups and variables. Our control groups are, first, you must be incredibly knowledgeable about your product. And this allows you to help customers make really good home furnishing choices that they'll love for many, many years. Secondly, you must provide accurate delivery expectations when the customer is in the research and purchasing phase. And third, you must address any and all customer issues after the sale. So that's the controls. If you can't do that, you're never going to be any good at furniture retail. We've been doing this 95 years, and that is a constant, those three things. Now the fun part, the variables, things that change all the time. And I think, how can I optimize my showroom and my website so that customers love it more each and every year? Well, first, we look at different vendors. So as an independent furniture store, we have over 100 different vendors. I find new ones every single year when I go to some of the exclusive furniture markets around the country. The other important thing is these vendors, are they equipped to provide what my customers need? So do my customers want more design options or do they want faster delivery? Because there's often a weighing of that. If a vendor offers 100 different styles, how can you possibly be producing them quick enough? You know, maybe you only want to offer 10 styles and get them to the customer in 6 weeks instead of 6 months, those kinds of decisions. Product styles, those will always vary and evolve. We know that styles are cyclical and things come back over time, and we center around classic designs with strong staying power because when you buy a solid hickory top or solid cherry wood Amish-made table or bedroom set, most people expect that to last 20 or 30 years, so you don't want to go too trendy. But it is important to have more trendy design options so that you have some like right-now appeal. Other variables are in the upholstery, your living room, your fabrics, your leathers. Those things change almost seasonally, but certainly year by year, different colors are become more popular than others. We see that now with warmer neutrals coming back in style, and some of the grays and grayses that were all the rage of the past 5 years are still popular, but they're not quite where they were even 12 months ago. Now, one thing that we have is Amish-made solid wood furniture that allows us to customize the finishes. So you can make the same design look completely different just by using different wood finishes and or paints and combinations of those things. So we have looks that you just won't find in the mass-produced furniture business. Most of the furniture in this country, in the United States, is imported. The wood furniture, 88.7% of the wood furniture sold in 2019 was imported, and nearly 100% of what I show in my showrooms is American made. So we're doing things very, very different than most furniture stores you're going to find. They don't offer custom finishes on any of that mass-produced imported stuff. Plus, they're using things like Asian hardwood, rubber wood, mango, other woods that are soft and not nearly as pretty as maple or cherry or hickory, quarter sawn oak. Anyway, those are all different, the variables. The other thing is there's design-oriented customers and there's practical use customers. So if you're going to buy a kitchen table and you want to have it and it's going to be used all the time, kids are going to do homework on it, you're going to eat breakfast and dinner there, you know, that's something you might consider doing a solid hickory top with more of a medium wood finish because, one, hickory is the hardest wood, so you're not going to dent it as often. Two, a medium to light finish is going to be more forgiving. You're not going to see all those little marks. But if you're more of a design-oriented customer and you want a sleek, dark wood with a nice, clean finish, cherry or maple is going to be the wood species, and you might do a dark finish like onyx or dark night, which has a little bit of a gray undertone. So those are all the things, and that's going to be for a more design-oriented customer. Those are all the variables that are – and there's so many more. There's an endless amount of variables in the furniture retail business. And, you know, in my brick-and-mortar operation in our three St. Louis area stores, there's one additional constraint, and that's physical size. So I am in the middle of a furniture retail experiment, and I have 48,000 square feet of usable showroom space and about the same amount of warehouse space to try to figure out what's the best mix of product for my customers. And that's the experiment that I literally do every single day and that my family's been doing for four generations. And after a while, you know, you get pretty good at that kind of stuff. So we're truly experts in our field. And with the nationwide delivery capabilities that we now have, we can bring you our amazing furniture into your home so you can enjoy it for many, many years to come and hopefully decades as well. And that's going to be on millerfurniture.com. That's M-U-E-L-L-E-R furniture.com and our specific Amish furniture website called Amish Furniture Direct USA. You can also call me directly on my personal cell phone at 618-977-8716. Ask for Mark Miller, and I will be happy to have a conversation about whatever your home furnishings needs are. Thank you so much for your time, and it is an honor to sponsor Zach and Dave here on LifeLab.
The human race, the human species.
Ah, that's great.
Our planet is our tribe. We're a tribe. We have to work together to keep us around.
So in the same way, like, let's go back to the Trump thing. In the same way that a Trump, like, let's say a Trumper would say, I am a Trumper and I am a Republican. The entire, you know, that's right. Those are inclusive of each other, where an anti-Trumper Republican would say, I'm a Republican, but Trumpers are not.
Right. The Venn diagram, they're not, the circles aren't concentric.
And they would even go as far as to say, Trumpers are not Republicans.
Yeah.
Not a true right. Republican. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So again, it's all those vantage points. Like, yeah. What is the identity, values, and emotions? What tribe gives that to you? And the globalists. And I have both. I definitely am a, you know, libertarian. I straddle both of these. Like, I understand that both camps have really important points there, and I don't view myself as part of either one. I'm probably just more contrarian, which is sucks because then I just think they all suck. All the options are terrible. But here's my main point. Tribalism up until, I don't know, let's pick an arbitrary time, when humans really started living in industrialized cities, let's say. Tribalism was literally, and you already said this without using the word, it was a survival mechanism. Now, tribalism is an opportunity for planetary extinction.
Ooh, okay. I'll push back on that, but
no, how? You get the wrong person running the wrong tribe, it leads to war that kills our whole species. And anyone that runs that war is doing so through the my tribe beats your tribe.
The reason I'm going to push back on that is because, sure, but I think that's less than 1% of what tribalism is today.
You get a Putin up there, you get a Trump, you get two strong guys, whether it's Trump or somebody else, it doesn't matter. Again, this isn't even my point. Peter Thiel, who's involved in that intelligence agency community, he's just like, it's a big deal.
You're right.
But so you don't view tribalism today, if we put the wrong person at the head of states with the technology, the military technology that we have, you don't think that that could lead to...
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Well, I'm asking you. I don't know what you're saying.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if we're talking about tribalism as a whole, you're talking about two tribes with the ability to end the human race, right? Yes, there are at least two. Maybe, I don't know.
Four.
Maybe a half a dozen.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about tribalism in general, I think that those tribes and the power players that we're talking about make up a small portion of the true power play that's going on globally at any one time. I think there are many tribes fighting for power in many different ways.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. But those other tribes that are fighting for that power don't literally have the firepower
right
to do that. So my only point I'm making is evolution. Tribalism has evolved, through my eyes, from an actual mechanism for our species to have to be here. Like, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for tribalism, especially through earlier stages, pre-city, all of that kind of thing. Like, tribes had to band together. You had to excommunicate the people that didn't fulfill that. It has now gone to a spot where if we keep tying into and letting that same primal evolutionary energy guide us that has got us to here, that will lead to our extinction.
Yeah, we'll have a mass extinction event.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean it.
And you get the wrong people, like a Hitler, running it.
Yeah. well, it's almost like that. Over time. Here's the deal, though. I mean, look at Genghis Khan or look at the Vikings or...
They didn't have the technology we have.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is they operated in a mechanism to extinct other tribes. They didn't have the firepower to do it so efficiently and on such a grand scale at the time, which we have now. That's the difference, right? It's like, it's not that...
If Hitler would have had nukes...
Oh, yeah, I mean...
World would be different today.
Yeah, this would be a different world.
So, my only point is, I find it very interesting and paradoxical that tribalism has helped us be alive to where we're at, and if we keep leaning into it too much, it'll help us remove ourselves from the planet.
Well, there's another key distinction, which is the tribe's mission is not to extinct everyone. They don't want to kill their own tribe.
Right.
What we're saying is the side effect of their firepower being so strong now would be that two tribes of opposing forces...
Mutually assured destruction.
Mutually assured destruction. What I would say to that is, ultimately, at the end of that, someone will survive. We will have people survive, even if 99% of the human population doesn't, or more, even, you know, several.
Don Schaefer will.
Someone will survive out of that.
Don Schaefer.
And that would be, it would be crazy, you know. I love, Lauren was watching something with Graham Hancock in it, looking at the history of humans.
Ancient Apocalypse.
And, there's evidence that there were grand civilizations that went through some sort of extinction event a long time ago that goes against what traditional
mainstream
archaeology
suggests.
Which is really interesting. So anyway, back to tribes.
Well, they're just everywhere. Webster Groves versus Kirkwood.
Yeah.
Bovolis versus Bovol West. Like, it's just innate in how our animal species operates.
What was your definition of tribe again? It was something about emotions and values.
I view your tribe as the group with which you get your identity, values, beliefs, and emotions from.
Yeah, we've talked about identity, and I like that. I think you build your identity from a bunch of tribes, right? You just talked about it.
Webster Groves. Yeah. You do, unless you're a fundamentalist in some way, and that we see people politically that way, and we do see some religious people that way, much fewer now. But I think that's one area where they don't get their identity from a bunch of tribes. They get everything from the one tribe, which is why they're so unique today.
Well, see, and I wonder if they feel that way. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe they don't.
Let's say we became public figures. Ultimately, people would judge us probably by a tribe. Whichever tribe they labeled us as is the most important tribe that we are in. And then they would say they're either on our side or against us.
But they'd label us whatever tribe. The public would label us whatever tribe fits within the agenda that they want to see us.
Exactly.
At. Yeah.
Which in reality, our depth of character is much deeper. We are members of many tribes.
All fathers. All human. Yeah,
we are humans. We are.
It's all humans. Yeah.
And that's what I think the point that I'm trying to make is when you're talking about identity, your identity is made up of many tribes, regardless of whether it's the one you feel strongest about.
I agree.
That was my point.
My point is in agreement. That's why the fundamentalist causes around the world realize that. And they want to control for that and say, no, all of your identity, beliefs, values, and emotions comes from this. Our dogmatic text. So, and it's usually tied to fundamentalist religions.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I mean, if you haven't seen some of those documentaries, like, dude, they definitely are not, they don't want your identity having anything coming from anything else. Not whether that actually occurs or not, I can't speak to with our interconnected world with the phones and everything, but that's their whole goal is to prevent the integration of other tribal influences on their tribe's identity and values and emotions.
Which is interesting because I think we're stepping on some territory that I think is interesting, which is what about the tribes that you are a member of, not by choice? And it seems that the diversity and inclusion crowd want there to be, and I'm making an argument here that's, you know, maybe not right. It seems like they want you to have full control over all tribes that you are in or not in, even if you were born into certain tribes. You should have the ability to opt out of them. And we're talking about
gender.
Yeah, gender. Oh, man. It's interesting how definitely on the gender front, they want you to be able to say, no, you know, I was born whatever, but I feel the other, right? I was born one gender, but I feel the other. Or I identify with the other, and I am the other. Okay, and that's fine. I've heard that argument extended to race, and then they seem to reject that, right? Like you can't say you want to be a member of a different race. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard that?
Yeah, I mean, there's funny. Chappelle has a whole shtick on that that's really good.
Oh, he does. He does.
I was just thinking applying this to age because there is ageism out there. What if through longevity research, eventually you're like, well, I don't want to be 60. I want to be 30.
I love that. Well, and everybody's not going to want to be 60.
Well, my point.
Who's going to be like, I want to be old and.
But you see what I'm saying.
Semi-disabled.
Like, ageism is a real thing. There's discrimination that occurs there. Our country has no respect for old people.
Right. And I guess I even stepped in a bucket there with the whole disabled thing because that's an ableist mentality.
Dave is a super tribalist here.
Privilege. What's so nuts is, like, you want to talk about emotion when it comes to tribalism.
Right? Yeah, that's where it all is.
I'm talking through these things, I'm literally just trying to talk through it.
Well, yeah, but you're also probably thinking about, don't say the wrong thing.
Exactly.
I don't want to get people upset with
me. Exactly. I don't want people to label
me. You're self-censoring. That's the whole point that I don't like about any of these conversations is, no, like, let's talk about these things without fear. I'm not even, like, casting judgment. Like, it's okay if I disagree with you. You don't have to, like, flip out and tell me I'm a horrible person or a racist or a whatever-ist.
Right. That's the
but,
and I
but,
guess
and,
that's
but people thing. Self-censor now they that, to where they don't even want to have the open conversation.
I know. It's like, well, if you say that, then you'll get labeled as this tribe. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like, well, I don't even want to I don't even want to be associated with that tribe. I don't even want to admit that an idea associated with that tribe went through my head and I considered it out loud to talk through it and decide what I really thought about it.
I just don't want to get sucked into certain conversations at all to not waste my brain power because I have no opinion on most of it and don't care.
Well, that's good. But what I would say is this. I think there are tribes. There's the what is it? I don't want to call it anti-free thought or anti-free speech, but I guess
pro-censorship.
Yeah, pro. Like there are groups, and I think that they are prevalent in academia right now, who would make the argument that it's good that we're self-censoring.
Oh, of course. Because there's danger and violent words.
Violence
and
those thoughts.
It's about safety and misinformation and protecting ourselves.
Right. And exclusivism, yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Anytime any tribe is trying to create inclusivity through exclusion, I don't like it.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that's kind of occurring across different schools with things, getting rid of different traditions that have occurred forever that have no kind of anyway, I don't even want to get into it. No opinion.
Yeah, so I guess going back to my point is you by muttering words, you can be a part of a tribe, even if you didn't want to be a part of that tribe. You said those words. Society now makes you a part of that tribe. In modern day society, that's the way that it is.
No, it's been that way prior because simply by literally uttering the guttural utterance of these sounds that we say, we're just by having a certain grouping of sounds and symbols come out of our mouth, we're already identifying as a tribe because of language.
Yeah, but I love how technology has made this a weapon, right? Because what you say is now recorded forever in the public record. And it used to be like, well, if you said it in the presence of a reporter and they printed it in the paper, now it's in the public record. You know what I mean? But now you've got Twitter, which, talking about current events, there's
crazy Musk stuff
going on.
There's tribe, pro Musk tribe, anti Musk tribe.
You've got the internet and anything that you've got email, you've got anything you say, even write, type, whatever is in the public record forever. And there's this desire for especially people who hold values that they consider to be different than yours, to assign tribes to you without your own free will. So you could say, I'm not a part of that tribe.
Well, because there's power in labeling.
Right. And they'll say, well, yes, you are. Look, you said X.
And that's just that's labeling, which ties to narrative, which we had a whole discussion on. It's controlling the narrative through the label of the tribe.
So they gain power over you by assigning you that label, that tribe.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, no, this is a cool topic. I'm just fascinated in the point about how I view tribalism. It's paradoxical, man. I don't even want to say evolve, but devolve. Like from we wouldn't be alive without it, but now if we lean too much into it, it could potentially kill most of us. Like that's interesting to me. That's just an interesting thought.
And here's the thing about the killing most of us thing. Like stoicism, it's outside of my control, 100% outside of my control. So I will entertain the idea, I will accept it, but then I'll move on, and then I'll say, okay, but what about the things that I can control, and let's focus
on that. I'm not worrying about this.
Right.
It's just a fact.
Right. So that's just what I'll say as a blanket statement about the human extinction one. Then I'll say, we talked about current events with Trump just not saying that he's running for president and will he get it or will he not?
He just announced
and
this week.
Tribes, right? Which is an interesting thing. How about what's going on with Twitter right now?
Yeah. So Musk privatized Twitter, took it. It was a public company.
$44 billion.
Yeah, $44 billion, which no one, people just throw that number around. I mean, that's just an ungodly amount of money to take something private.
I'd love to see an infograph that says of all the money that anyone will ever be worth, like how many households would you add together at this date and time to be worth $44 billion?
And his view of it was to protect free speech, to protect the online forum for people to say what they want, as long as it's not illegal. Like, that seems to be his threshold, at least that he's spewing, whether you agree or not, I don't know. But if you looked into the lawsuit that was occurring where they had to surface all their private texts and tweets, that seems to be what was going on. Now, of course, a strategic person would say, well, yeah, but this is a smart guy. He knows that's going on, so he's going to send those type of texts and DMs because he knows they'd be part of discovery. I don't know. He was always talking about, hey, man, this is the free speech thing. That's why I'm going to buy Twitter, talking to these other billionaires. Yeah, here's a couple billion. Yeah, we need to be able to say what we want and not be censored, everyone. So I kind of believe him there, but boy, there's a whole bunch of people that don't, and Twitter is like collapsing. People are leaving in droves.
There are people who like what he's doing and are ideologically aligned with this because I guess they're latching onto the free speech thing. And then there's people who are just, some people just hate Musk and everything that he does.
Well, then I view that less as Twitter, more as always people hate the richest person in the world. That's okay. Just always occurred. Bill Gates was there forever. Like, that just doesn't matter.
Right, right. Okay, that makes sense. So there, who knows why they hate him, but they're just assigning – again, they're assigning labels and they're assigning –
Well, and they see how he is on Twitter and, oh, he's so dumb. He's so – so many people are like, this guy's an idiot, and it's just hilarious.
He values this. I think that goes back to the whole labeling thing, right? People will – they'll extrapolate – and they'll say, he values this and this and this, where really, if you put together the sum of his life,
well, look at what he probably does.
Say, no, I don't value right. that at all.
Right. Yeah. And we have a little different skewed view with our friend Jimmy Gleason being the director of SpaceX. So we, you know,
full disclosure,
we have a little more knowledge of how this guy operates day in, day out, and how he thinks. Most people only know Musk through Twitter.
Yeah, I would just say, what is it? You judge content and character by a person's actions. Isn't that – somebody said that?
Yeah, let's butcher that one too. Well, basically, it's the fundamental attribution theory. It's like, if bad things happen to us, it's because circumstances were bad. If bad things happen to others, it's because they're fundamentally a bad person. And that's what is going on with Musk.
Okay. This is going to be the quote butcher. Yeah,
the quote butcher episode.
We could call this tribal or butcher.
We could create our own tribe. Get on podcasts and just butcher quotes. And there would be that would be a big tribe.
That would be. Everybody does it. I love it. Okay, so what I was going to say about the Twitter thing that's interesting to me, if we're talking about different tribes, is I think overall I've got a positive image of Musk because of the things that he's accomplished. I think it's amazing that he's been able to send rockets to space that land themselves. He's built companies that do this. Okay, he hasn't done it single-handedly, but he has built an electric vehicle manufacturer that is profitable and worth more than something like 10 times more than any other vehicle.
He's a builder. He's an innovator. Yeah. He's a visionary. He pushes the envelope for the whole species.
Just the things that he does is so he's done amazing things. I will say that. That's why I think I hold him in positive light. On the flip side, seems like he's a pretty terrible family man. I don't know that for fact.
Well, clearly he can't spend much time with them with all the stuff he's doing.
He's got, 12 kids? Yeah, a lot. All he does is work.
But that's all part of his principles, too.
Sure.
You know, he does seem to live according to his principles, whether I agree with all of them. Of course I don't, but...
Well, and the one big one he espouses is that he's trying to help humanity.
We need to populate the Earth. He thinks we're going to run into a depopulation crisis, and...
Well, that's one thing.
He's doing his single part there to help out.
in coordination with getting us to Mars.
Right.
Right. Because he thinks we need to expand.
Be an interplanetary species.
If you listen to Michio Kaku, the physicist who writes and stuff, that's in alignment with his thinking, too, if we're going to advance as a civilization, is, that's the next frontier. We've explored every frontier on this planet.
Not ocean.
Right?
Not ocean.
Well, not to the bottom of the ocean.
And there's a ton there.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And there's a lot of people that say, we're wasting dollars doing space. We got a lot to explore here, including Lynn Alden.
Oh, that's interesting.
She's like, this is the low-hanging fruit.
You're right.
Right? Well, I'm not right. It's their idea.
Okay, how about this? That's a good point.
Yeah.
And I'll tie that. I'll give that one more supporting artifact. Yeah. If you listen to the account of a UFO encounter with Commander David Fravor.
Fravor?
The UFO was hovering above the water, and there was something huge underneath the water that was causing like a disturbance in the water. And they've seen these UFOs go in and out of the water, which is nuts.
Interesting.
Anyway, so anyway, if you want to, at least it's an interesting account, listen to, and they've got video and all kinds of stuff because it happened to Navy pilots, like multiple Navy pilots at the same time. And it's on recording. Commander David Fravor.
Just Fravor.
All right. So, and that's another tribe. People who believe in UFOs and don't. But back to the...
Or humans and aliens.
Right. Exactly. So, gosh, we got these... I love... It's so crazy. When
Air Force, Navy, Army, Marines. Like, there's just tribes all sports, around us.
Sports teams, right. You know. But if we go back to the whole Elon Musk and Twitter thing... There are elements to what Musk is doing that I don't like. Like,
well, of course,
I think they had 7,500 employees, and I think as soon as he got on board, he laid off half, and then he sent out an email that was like, "You're going to have to come into the office for 40 hours at minimum. If you don't do that, you're fired." You know,
with
3 months severance.
Right, no, like the original one was more than 1 month, so it was more than the law required. With that was the first time he did the email. The second one, the more recent one, is hardcore intense or off the team. That was with 3 months.
Right. So, and in this new email that Zach's talking about was basically like, you're either going to be hardcore, or you're going to work hard for Twitter, like long hours and hard work,
yeah,
or take a 3 month severance, and then literally had a link like, yeah, click this if you're in. If you don't click it, so you're like, it's an opt in, not an opt out.
Right.
If you don't click it, then
the team.
You know, you're automatically off, and you get 3 months of severance.
Oh wow, they did the opposite. I didn't know that. Wow, that's interesting. I like that.
Yeah. So by default, you're out and you get severance. If you click this and opt in to being a hardcore worker for Twitter. Then you can,
I mean,
stay.
The guy's ballsy, if nothing else, because he's doing magnetism. He's saying, I don't want the people who are pro censorship and anti me and anti hard work and all of that. I don't go work elsewhere. Go be happy elsewhere. And here's 3 months pay. Great. But it will also attract people that want that, which I like that. My flip side is just saying, Jesus, like, you just spent $44 billion. Like, I mean,
right.
I don't know much about tech, but is there couldn't the system break during this process and truly, like,
and just yesterday people were tweeting, this is how ironic it is, critical systems at Twitter have zero engineers left on them. It's just a matter of time until the entire thing goes down.
And at some point, like, if that and I agree with a lot of what he's trying to do, but I also, if I spent $44 billion, even though I want to do whatever I want to do, because I'm the richest person in the world and can do that and like to be playful, I mean, Jesus, like, I'm going to try to be a little more strategic in how I go about my layoffs and stuff to prevent total mass exodus.
Lauren said it last night, and I was like, yeah, that's a good way to put it. She's like, he's not afraid to take risk.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Holy shit. No kidding. I remember watching, I told her, I was like, there was a documentary. And it was that documentary that you told me about that was on Netflix that went over powerful, successful people, like game changers or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And the one on Elon Musk, that the part of it that stuck with me was there was a period of time where he was worth like $150 million and Tesla was going to go under if he didn't put up his entire $150 million. And he put whole thing up for collateral to take out a loan to keep Tesla going. And I was just
and
like,
he was living with friends, couldn't pay his personal bills.
Yeah, I was just like, if I was worth $150 million, I don't care what business I'm running. If you're like, you have to put it all on the line to keep this business going, I'd be like, I'm out.
That's what's different than him.
Any other business.
He did his first business was the advertising model that, like, kind of like an early MapQuest, made $8 million from that. Instantly rolled that into X.com, which merged with PayPal, made the 150 from that. Instantly took that, opened SpaceX. 1 year later, I believe, opens Tesla at the same time building these companies. Insane. And that's when he had to roll the personal funds.
And he's all in all the time. Yeah. It was a $44 billion bet on Twitter.
Right.
It's just insane.
It's awesome to watch.
So like, I think that's the point. We're tying this back to tribalism is like, gosh, there's some part of me that aspires to be able to do that.
Well, of course. Just like Trump. That's why he has people view it as they're doing what they want. They're doing the things we can't do because we're held back by the structures and structures of society, and we value those.
Right.
Whether it's Musk or Trump or whoever, it doesn't matter. It's inspiring.
Yeah. On the flip side, he's doing stuff that, like, let's be real here. There are people who got caught up in this Twitter deal who are good people who worked at Twitter who lost their livelihood through no fault or control of their own. And here's where the personal – I'm all about personal responsibility. But I think the personal responsibility crowd will get out of control with this one and say, well, all they have to do is move to San Francisco and uproot their entire family and go into the office every day for more than 40 hours a week. And what, they're not even willing to do that? Then they should be fired. And I'm just like, I think that's a bit much, especially when we compare it to his other companies where we're aware of people who work remotely in pretty big positions. You know what I mean? So for him to do that, I'm anti that. I think, you know, just indiscriminately taking people's livelihoods, you know, willy nilly, and I'll use those words because that's how this has been.
It's I don't. Like, I agree.
Yeah, you're out.
It's very arbitrary.
Yeah.
I agree, but I also just view that's the game, man. It's capitalism, bro. Like that's the game. Yeah. And whether you like it or not.
Well, I'm just I'm explaining my conflict.
Of
like these different ideas.
Your cognitive dissonance around Musk.
Right, right. Yeah, because I think as a leader and a business owner, one of the values that I hold that I want more businesses to take is basically treating your assets well. Your people are your assets. Treat them well. You know.
But they weren't his people. He obviously didn't view most people working at Twitter. He viewed them as the censorship people that he didn't like.
And that's my – and so here's what I'm – this is where I'm trying to do what tribalists do. I'm trying to justify his actions. So just by judging him by his actions, if we're doing the butchered quote about content of character, just to judge him by his actions – as a businessman and a leader in this situation, he just went in and destroyed some people's livelihood. Okay, that's the anti-argument. The reason I'll be like, yeah, but I'm a pro-Musker, so I need to make up a reason why this is good, is because here's the argument I'll make. He's trying to cut the fat, and there's plenty of fat at Twitter. There are plenty of people who are either against his ideals or just lazy or whatever, and he's hitting the reset button. This isn't the team that he built. So he wants to have a team that he would have chosen, that he would have built. So he's hitting the reset button and basically saying, look, if you don't have the same ideals as me and these are my ideals, you're free to leave. And as a matter of fact, by default, you will. Unless you pledge that you have these ideals, click this link and then we'll rebuild this thing together.
Yeah, he's building the Musk tribe at Twitter. And when you live on the edge, you bleed. People bleed. That you can't live on the cutting edge and not have difficult shit happen. Right. And it does suck. And I'm not saying I think, oh, well, they can survive and move their family. Yeah, that is hard. But then I contrast that against they're not dead.
Well,
their skills are still lively and they're going to probably be happier working in a company where they're better aligned with. If that's a huge issue for them and this guy comes in who clearly they have very different values from, they're going to choose working there and just make themselves miserable because they don't have the courage to say, you know what? I'm making a great paycheck, but I disagree with who this person is and how they live their life and run the world. But I'm going to keep going to work because I have security. That's to me.
So I'll tie this back to the way we opened this episode, and I think this will be a place where I start to wrap. Is you talked about
you're going to wrap it? Awesome.
I'll start to wrap things up for my ideas.
I thought you were going to
let me clarify. Although I am a huge rapper, if you're going to talk about tribes,
that's
I'm in
a good tribe. Yeah.
If you haven't heard me,
music
rap.
Different genres of music.
Oh god, that's
big
another
tribes.
One. That's another one. Hilarious. So what I'll say is he is using the commodity of his values and he is expanding that commodity and he is taking over other tribes. So the Twitter tribe is no more. He's now a new tribe. It's still now it's labeled the Twitter tribe, but the identity and values of that tribe are now going to assimilate with he's a conqueror.
He's a corporate Genghis Khan. People think Genghis Khan went in and just slaughtered everyone. Not true. He was huge on diversity. He actually went in and took all the elements of societies that he thought was cool, different, unique, of interest, added value to his horde, if you will, going around, and integrated them, but in a much more violent way. Hey, you're not fired. Hey, we'll kill your whole family in the street. They killed children and women in the street if you don't join us. Like, we like what you're doing here with these things. Be part of us, or if not, we're going to kill you. Now it's not we're going to kill you. It's going to, hey, you got to go get a different job.
Right.
It's
right.
The same thing.
You're right. That's a good point. I like that. I like that.
So Musk
analogy.
Is a civilized Genghis Khan, yeah. At least with Twitter.
Right. And in the same way, I mean, Genghis Khan, you know, like talking about the muted thing, Genghis Khan had thousands of children.
I was just going to say the children part. Dude, the children.
Musk's only at 12.
How is this not a meme on Twitter already?
I don't know.
We got to get Jay to create it.
I don't know, but yeah, he's got to spread that DNA like Genghis Khan did.
Musk is Genghis Khan.
There was some study, just a side note, that like talked about how many people, it was some crazy percentage of people have. Can trace their DNA back to Genghis.
That's what Musk is trying to make that happen. he puts on his burnt hair clone and just rocks out, man.
Oh, hilarious. We're going to make people hate him even more with this conversation.
Whatever.
Oh, hilarious.
But that's the thing. People, it goes back to beliefs. Like your Viktor Frankl quote you love, mine is just people believe their beliefs. Or in psychology, they say people believe the beliefs where their preferences lie. So, and we find ways to rationalize it, man.
Yeah,
it
just, we do. We do.
So we're not going to create any Musk joiners. We're not going to get any off the boat. They're where they were when we started this, that's where they're going to be.
So I got my change challenge. Mm-hmm. All right. We've talked about tribes and tribalism and how it came about through history, how the consequence of being kicked out of the tribe in the past meant death, and how today it just means, you know, death of maybe the way you see yourself, an identity.
Or
death.
Your income.
Or in this instance, we're talking about income death, right? Man, and how much that would impact you today. Think about it. You were part of a loved and valued Twitter tribe that paid you and was in line with your ideals, and that tribe is no more. It is gone now. It has been conquered.
Because it's part of a system where that is legally allowed to happen.
Exactly. And it now has different values. And so you are now excommunicated from that tribe, or your tribe has been dissolved. And so what I'll say, and on the flip side from that, so that's having it forcefully removed from you. That how negative that is. What about being forcefully included into a tribe that you don't want to be associated with because of the way that you wrote or something you said or just a thought that you had publicly that was recorded in some sort of media or on the internet? And now society as a whole is putting you into a tribe that you don't want to be in.
Nice.
So you can have tribes forcefully stolen from you. You can have your tribes dissolved so that they don't exist anymore. You can be forced into tribes that you don't want to be a member of in modern day society. And what I'd say is this.
Yeah, what's the change part? What's the challenge?
The change challenge is to take a piece of paper, write down all the tribes that you think that you are a part of. And then think about tribes that are the opposite or that hold differing values from those tribes. So it's almost like here's the ones that I'm a part of. Here are the ones that I think I'm an opposite of. And just do an inventory to say, do the actions that I take on a daily basis, right? So it's almost like a living. Am I living by my values by doing so with tribal inventory? So it will help you determine if you're living a life true to your values, true to your tribes. So the change challenge is write down the tribes you think you're a part of, write down the ones that you think oppose those, and check your actions based on those tribes.
Got it. Nice. Nothing jumps into my head on this one. I like yours, trying to do the reflection. Mine is less write down. It's just like, look around, pay attention, listen to the radio, listen, like anything you're doing, just be like, what tribe are they representing? Like, what are they trying to say? Do it for an hour. It doesn't matter where you are. As long as other humans are talking, we can't talk without constantly making references to our reference groups or our tribes that we think are important. Like, it's so ingrained in us. Again, just as a don't write anything down, but just kind of playfully, because it'll be harder for you to do it when you're talking. But just whatever you're doing, just be like, what tribe are they? Oh, God, they're talking about this. And people don't even know they're doing it because it's so ingrained.
I think I have a good analogy. Tell me if this is accurate. Pretend life is a sport, like a game of sport that is going on around you, and put on a striped shirt. Be the referee.
Yeah.
Referees are supposed to be neutral. They're supposed to see the game as it is.
And keep the rules.
And keep the rules and not have bias. So I like that. Put on your referee shirt. Notice the game going on around you. And think about the calls that you would make in an unbiased fashion against both sides.
Well, and it's funny because that's the point, is people just going through our daily life communicating, we don't view it as any game going on. But all we're doing all day is references to tribalism all day long. All of us.
Yeah, it's all a game.
It's interesting. And then there's different levels of games, and the biggest one is the globalist nationalist, like this the country level games. But then there's the smaller games, the corporate level games, the Musk stuff. Then we have family. Oh, what community do you live in? Oh, where did you go to high school in St. Louis? Talk about a tribal question.
Right.
St. Louis, well, where'd you go to high school? It's like, oh, I'm placing you in a socioeconomic status and making all kinds of inferences based upon who you are as a human being, based on where your parents happen to live.
You've even got fun ones, like, what's the better part of an Oreo cookie, the cookie or the cream? Yeah. You've got fun, ridiculous
everything,
ones.
Because selling and marketing, you have to have friction. You have to have differences of opinion.
To generate emotion.
Every talk show is there has to be conflict. There has to be disagreement.
People act on emotion, and you want to generate emotion.
Yeah. So this was a fun one. We're part of tribes. I believe we always will be. I believe even when AI takes over our species eventually, there will be AI because we've programmed it. I think AI will also become tribal. So we could have talked about that. That could have been fun. On a doom and gloom response, I view tribalism is interesting because it's been both a survival mechanism and also a potential opportunity for mass extinction if we're not careful with who we put in charge of big nations that have nukes. But it can also be really fun because if you create a great tribe with your family and friends, it makes life more worth living because it gets back to connection, to sharing, to love. Tribe isn't all negative in survival. It's also, let's spread love. Like, let's spread positive energy. So that's a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
So figure out your tribes, have fun with them, or build a tribe of your own, which I do think that's kind of what Musk is doing at Twitter. And as we say at Life Lab, experiment with life.